Chapter 11. Elith was close enough now to identify the mounds and could not bring herself to move closer, and though she had seen enough for the image to be branded vividly forever in her mind, she could not force herself to turn away. The ghastly scene had a surreal nightmare quality that transfixed her in revulsion. Bones, internal organs, skin, uniform, and gear, neatly separated, placed in piles. From where she stood, his skin seemed to be all in one piece, as though it had been a suit he'd decided to shed. Captain Ames slipped past her, moved cautiously in a half-crouch, like a man approaching a wild, wounded animal. Varen and Karush arrived at the edge of the glade and stopped, both surveying the scene. Elith glanced over at them, read their reactions. Varen went pale, his hand to his mouth. If he had vomited, she wouldn't have been surprised, but he managed to suppress the impulse. Even the immovable Wari Karush couldn't contain his shock and horror. And Elith realized something more. It had been his duty to protect the envoy from harm, a duty he was now realizing he had failed at in the most catastrophic way. "What?" Karush said, but nothing more. Ames was in a full crouch now, a few feet from the mounds. "No sign of a struggle or animal. No prints apart from a couple of his." He glanced up at the trees, shaking his head, at a complete loss. "I had no idea all of that could fit inside a human body," Varen said, in a mix of disgust and genuine amazement. Karush wheeled to face him then, and to Elith's alarm, the Azirim's hand went to the hilt of his void edge.
"You,"
he said. Varen held up his hands defensively, shook his head.
"No, Karush, no way," he said. "I had nothing to do with that."
It was too late. Karush was going to cut Varen down where he stood, and Elith was helpless to prevent it. Her mind raced to find the right phrase she could utter to intervene. She stood paralyzed in the moment. But then Karush's hand relaxed, and though he did not remove it from the hilt, the coiled tension left his body, and Elith saw that he was not going to strike after all. It was clear, though, that if he had detected any sign of deceit in Varen, there would have been no such mercy. He glared at Varen a moment longer, then turned his attention back to the glade.
"I'm not saying I hadn't ever thought about it," Varen unwisely added, "but if I had tried to do that, I could never have been that tidy."
"Stop," Elith said sharply to Varen, before Karush made a move, and then to Karush. "Did Subo detect anything?" Karush shook his head. A few moments later, as if summoned by the mention of its designation, the device arrived and took a position by Karush's side like an obedient hound.
"Captain, what about you?" Elith asked. "Anything you saw or heard?"
"Where's all the blood?"
Ames said to himself, either ignoring her or too focused to have heard the question. He was knelt now by the grotesque shrine, cautiously investigating the pile of bones with the blade of his knife. Elith had been too repulsed to look carefully before, but at Ames's comment, she forced herself to walk closer and observe. Clinically, she scanned each grouping in turn and discovered to her astonishment that Ames hadn't been exaggerating. Not only was the ground clear of it, as far as she could tell, the bones and organs themselves were completely devoid of any trace of blood, as though they'd been painstakingly washed and cleaned.
"We need to get off this planet," Ames said, standing and stepping back.
He looked across the four piles one last time, and then turned and started back toward the camp. Elith lingered a moment longer, scanning the ground and trees near where the envoy must have been standing only a few minutes before, and seeing the tendril rose vines
brought back a memory unbidden of their first trip into the woods when Sardis had pricked his finger.
"Captain," she said. "Yeah?"
She walked around the gruesome display and closer to the tree line, half an arm's length from the nearest vine. "Did Arbiter Oyun ever give you an analysis of the cutting from the first tendril rose you brought in?"
"No," Ames said, walking over to her. "Haven't really had time to follow up on it. Why?"
Elith knelt and peered under the blossoms to the elegant stems beneath. And, suspicion confirmed, pointed. Ames crouched beside her, saw what she had discovered. The delicate, glass-like thorns weren't their usual crystalline clear. They were crimson.
"We need to get off this planet," Ames repeated. "Right now."
He stood again and once more headed toward the base, quicker now. This time, Elith joined him, and Varen fell in beside her. But Karush and Subo didn't follow. Instead, they moved together toward the remains. Subo reconfigured slightly, its arms folding and fusing into a half-moon basket. Elith paused, turned partially back. Karush knelt and began to gather the bones. Ames was on the other side of the glade before he realized what was happening.
"Karush!"
Captain Ames called, but Karush ignored him.
"Karush?"
he said again.
"I cannot leave him here, like this," Karush said. "Worry, Karush," Ames said, his tone quieter.
"Buddy, I'm not sure you can even say it's him anymore."
"I will not," Karush answered, continuing his grim task.
Difficult as it was, Elith forced herself to return and aided the Azirim in the effort. Wordlessly, eventually the other men joined in, and they completed the work with as much respect and silent dignity as any of them could offer in the situation. Soon enough, they were all returning together, Subo bearing the remains, covered now by its metamorphic shell. When they reached the field camp, Elith found all the activity unnerving. The Arbiter had clearly given some order in their absence, and the rest of the task force moved with purpose, oblivious to the shocking tragedy that had befallen them. She wasn't even sure how to tell them what had happened.
"Arbiter,"
Ames called as they approached. Oyun looked over and took them all in at a glance, and in that brief span, he understood.
"Where's the envoy?"
he asked, even though his expression showed that he already knew the answer, at least in part.
"Subo has him in there," Ames responded, pointing. "What's left of him anyway?"
"But what happened?"
Oyun said. For a time, the group was silent, unable to explain, and it seemed to Elith unwilling to speak of it. She stepped into the gap.
"The planet took him apart," she said.
And as the words left her mouth, an adjacent thought struck her. The image of the ship scattered across the landscape rose to her mind.
"It took him apart," she repeated to herself.
Oyun looked to her and, as usual, made the connection immediately.
"Disassembled," he said.
He fell silent for a thoughtful moment until Captain Ames broke in.
"I'm not sure what you guys are thinking about," he said, "but maybe it's something we can all discuss when we're off-world. We need to roll this up, get safe, and come up with a new approach."
"The envoy understood the risks involved," Karush replied. "He would not wish us to abandon our task merely on account of his death." "And there's no need for you to stay, Wari Karush," Varen said. "Your task was to serve a single purpose, and that, through no fault of yours, has become sadly unnecessary." "Through no fault of yours."
Elith understood Varen's tone and his intent.
He was trying to gently support the captain's recommendation while releasing Karush from both duty and guilt. But Karush didn't receive it that way.
"I was brought to serve two purposes," Karush answered. "Now, I have only one."
He fixed Varen with a stare of both stone and flame, an unyielding intensity only partly subdued by his otherwise blank expression.
"Well," Varen said, "perhaps that too has become unnecessary."
There was an implied threat in Karush's words that Eleth didn't fully understand. The tension between the two men added a new dimension of stress to the group.
"I'm not going to argue what Sardis would have wanted or expected," Ames said, to diffuse or at least redirect the discussion. "But I'm here as an advisor, and I'm strongly advising that we jump off this, he paused, shook his head, and waved his hand at the landscape around them. "This demon rock, before it disassembles anyone else."
Arbiter Oyun did not look back at the group. Instead, he headed toward the field station and over his shoulder said,
"I believe you may be right, Captain."
"Sir,"
Karush said, with respect, but clearly ready to challenge the elder man.
"I'm the ranking officer now," Oyun said, cutting off any argument, "and this is my operation. I'll run it the way I deem best."
He turned and strode to an open-air communication station. The others followed him into the shelter. He was already at work on a terminal, activating a new display that appeared to show a series of Hezra command codes.
"The captain is right," he said. "The situation has become untenable. And we can't solve this problem if we're all dead. I'm authorizing immediate evacuation."
He punched in several codes, transmitting them back to the Clariana, still in orbit, and then opened a team-wide communication channel.
"This is Arbiter Oyun. Due to a critical change in threat assessment, all personnel are to prepare for immediate departure. Rally at base center for further instructions. All personnel, rally at base center."
He closed the channel, and the impact of his message rippled through the troopers working the site, exchanging glances with one another, looking around at the surrounding woods to see what new horror might be descending upon them. Taking offense at being ordered to retreat instead of advance. Oyun started off toward the central meeting point, and the others followed suit. Eleth caught up to the Arbiter and touched his elbow. He looked at her, and she spoke in a low voice.
"I can't leave," she said. "Not yet."
He regarded her for a moment, but said nothing. Whether he purposely ignored her statement or was merely too focused on other things to respond, he turned his attention to the gathering troopers without answering her. The Arbiter took his place in front of the group, and he began his address as the last team members trickled in. Eleth found Nieta in the midst of the others. The question was plain on her face. Eleth shook her head, and a moment later, Oyun began. She was surprised once again to see the man transform from kindly scientist to intimidating military officer. When he spoke, his voice boomed with authority.
"Envoy Sardis is dead," he said abruptly.
The shocking revelation stunned the members of the force, but Oyun continued,
"Killed by unknown means, by some force of this planet. The threat to our operation is now too high and too unpredictable to warrant continuation at this time. As ranking officer, I'm ordering your evacuation off-world until we can reevaluate and determine a better course of action. This is not a failure. Our operation is not canceled. I'm temporarily halting your work on the planet, but everyone should expect to return in due time."
"The order has already been transmitted to the Clariana,
and departure will begin as soon as they respond with an all clear. There will be time for questions later. For now, grab whatever personal gear you need and then board the ship you arrived in. Leave everything else. Dismissed.
Everyone did as they'd been instructed, but Elith noted how much more slowly they moved to carry out the new orders. Where previously the troopers had acted with crisp precision, now there was a clear reluctance. Quiet conversations began between pairs and trios, even as they prepared for departure. Oyun watched the team disperse and then turned toward his research station. Elith followed after him, and when they had enough separation from the others, she called after him.
"Arbiter," she said.
He paused long enough for her to catch up, and she continued,
"I'm not leaving."
The man sighed, frustration clear on his face, but there was a kindness in his eyes that caught Elith off guard.
"I know you don't like it, dear," he said. "But I am the highest-ranking officer here now that Sardis is gone. By Hezra protocol, this is my operation, and I've ordered your evacuation."
"Your evacuation." Elith had noticed it the first time he'd said it, but the repetition made it clear it had been no accident.
"You're not leaving," she said.
Oyun held her look for a moment, and then gave a subtle shrug.
"Now that the base is established, I have all I need to continue the work," he replied. "There's no reason to jeopardize everyone else. I'll call when I have a solution."
"It's madness to leave you here alone."
"There's plenty of madness on this planet already. A little more won't change anything, and I certainly would never ask anyone to do something I myself am unwilling to do first."
"Arbiter, no offense to your team, but there's no one else like you here. If we lose you, we lose everything. There's zero chance we can solve this without you."
"I appreciate the sentiment, but maybe we'll get lucky and those anomalies will subside once everyone else is off-world."
It took a couple of seconds for Elith to decipher his thought process, but when she did, she asked, "You think all of this has been some sort of reaction to our presence?"
"I'm not sure what I think yet, but it's a hypothesis worth testing. Our first team was 17 members, and our own is larger. Perhaps a somewhat smaller group would experience smaller effects."
"Well, regardless of your plans, I'm not done here yet."
"I've given you a direct order, which it seems you are intent on disobeying. I could very easily have my troopers put you on lockdown for violating our agreement."
"The fact that you haven't yet makes me think maybe you'd be glad for the company?"
Oyun's eyes crinkled with a hint of a smile. "I do not ask it of you," he said.
"You don't need to," she answered.
"If I'm leaving, then she must," a voice said from behind Elith.
"Nieta."
"Our circumstances have changed, Advocate," Oyun said. "Our former plans should be reevaluated in light of what we've learned."
"Circumstances haven't changed, Arbiter. It's just that the dangers of this planet aren't so theoretical anymore. I won't argue with your order to evacuate the team, but I go where she goes."
"Umarai was here, Nieta," Elith said. "And if Umarai was here, then it's likely that at least some of the others made it too. If there's even a chance that the sisters of our house walked this planet, I won't be able to rest until I know for certain what's become of them."
"You didn't seem to have any such concern when we first discussed it," Nieta said. "It isn't even your house anymore, Exile."
"That may be," Elith said. "But I'm here now, Nieta, and I'm not willing to leave.
Not yet."
"Arbiter," Nieta said. "She is under my command, and I am under your authority. I will leave the decision to you whether to force her to come with me or order me to stay with her.
I'll order neither,
Oyun replied. Elith has given her answer, and I'll not contradict it.
Then we are a team of three, Nieta said.
Four,
said Captain Ames. When he'd wandered up, Elith didn't know, but the little crowd they were forming had started to attract some attention. Looking around, she saw a few clusters of troopers crossing toward their ships, their eyes on the Arbiter and his conference. Varen was heading their way, with Karush and Subo close behind.
Captain Ames, you should return with your team.
All due respect, sir. You're going to need someone around for the manual labor.
I considered all of this before I gave the order, and I have given the order. If necessary, I will have you relieved of duty.
It won't be necessary, sir,
Ames said, smiling and friendly as ever, with a stance that suggested he wasn't going anywhere, no matter what anyone told him. Oyun looked skyward and sighed with exaggerated emotion.
A single loss of life, and our entire command structure is already coming apart at the seams, he said.
And then he looked over Elith's shoulder and said, and I suppose you're here to argue that you should be allowed to stay as well?
Me? Varen said. No, I was just coming over to see what everyone was talking about. But now that you've offered, very well, I accept.
Karush drew up beside Varen, wordlessly. The look on his face said enough. He would be wherever Varen was, no matter what. Subo stood silently by his side, arms returned to their normal configuration. They'd laid the envoy's remains somewhere, though Elith didn't know when or where. Oyun swept his eyes around the group.
Six, he said, counting Karush and Subo as one, as it should be.
Too many to test your hypothesis? Elith asked.
No, just five more than I'd expected, the Arbiter replied.
He glanced at the two vessels prepping to depart and shook his head.
But you are correct. I would be glad for the company.
He looked back at her and added,
truth be told, I've always been afraid I would die alone.
I'm not in a rush to die together, just to be clear, Varen said, unless it's absolutely necessary.
The group lapsed into silence for a few moments, until Varen, of course, broke it.
Why is everyone so glum? I know it's been a rough start, but we have no idea what else we might experience here. Maybe all the strangeness of the planet will grant us some unexpected benefits, too.
No one else seemed to know how to respond, but Elith did.
Grief, she said, your boundless optimism is, by comparison, making your intellect seem quite limited.
Varen smiled and made a brief gesture, fist at his side and an open hand stretched out, a reference to a pose in Elith's meditation sequence. Watcher greets the storm, the physical mnemonic of a willingness to stand and confront the unknown.
How far do you think the risk extends? Ames asked.
I have no clue,
Oyun answered.
I advised Adarin and Vanquin to return to formation with Clariana beyond the gravity threshold. I hope that will prove a sufficient buffer.
Ames shook his head. No good, sir. Travel would be an hour at least.
If we get in real trouble, no one will be able to reach us in time.
I came in on a Clariana shuttle. I intend to keep that here in case of emergency.
If what happened to the envoy isn't an emergency, I'd hate to see one, Varen said.
Shuttle short range, Ames said, ignoring Varen's comment. No jump capability, and it'd be a tight fit for all of us.
I wasn't expecting to carry more than one, Captain. But if you have a different recommendation, make it.
I'd keep Vanquin. Gunship might come in handy.
Not an option unless one of you has a couple of years' worth of training I'm not aware of. Those gunships aren't easy to pilot, and I absolutely will not allow anyone else to stay.
Well,
I guess that's a fair point, but we should at least keep Vanquin in sync orbit for QRF.
QRF?
Varen asked.
Quick reaction force,
Ames responded, and then continued making his case to the Arbiter.
If you change your mind and want more shooters, Tal and her team can drop back in. Still wouldn't be close enough to extract us in a hurry, but if things go even more sideways, we could hop in the shuttle and they could at least meet us halfway, and then jump us out.
Uyun deliberated for a few moments, then nodded.
That sounds reasonable, he said.
He stepped away from the group and scanned the camp, more intently this time. From what Elith could tell, it looked like the last of the personnel were loading up. A few troopers stood on the boarding ramps, watching the discussion. The Arbiter returned his attention to the small team that had formed around him.
I've clearly shown too much kindness that has been interpreted as weakness, he said with a stern look. It would seem I'm unable to command anything of any of you. Last chance to change your mind before I let our people go.
He looked each of them in the eye in turn, searching out their resolve. Under his gaze, no one moved or made a sound. Even Varen, for once, gave the moment its appropriate gravity.
Very well, he said. Captain Ames, would you make the arrangements with Vanquin? Or is that too much like an order for you to follow? Sir, yes, sir, Ames said, snapping off a perfect salute before turning and trotting off toward the gunship.
Hey, Tal, you got a sec? He said into his communicator as he went.
I need to check in with Clariana, Uyun said, addressing the others, and then we'll discuss what comes next.
He turned and went into his station. The rest of them stood silently together, each reflecting on this newer, heavier commitment they'd made. And, off of Oyun's last words, imagining just what exactly might come next. Elith watched Ames. Tal had come out to meet him halfway, and from her body language, Elith could tell she wasn't happy with the discussion. It appeared to be fairly heated, but Ames managed to prevail, probably through some mix of rank and good nature. For some reason, watching Tal's reaction triggered a stab of sharp-edged fear in Elith, reminding her that the planet could seemingly take any one of them at any moment, without warning or even obvious mechanism. But in the midst of that fear, she felt, too, the deep teachings of her former life welling up to meet it. Sereth Hanan, the quiet action of one who endures. She had struggled against a shifting, unpredictable planet once before and endured. She would do so again or die in the attempt. The fear didn't completely dissipate, but it lost its edge and settled into the background, a thing to be aware of, but not to fixate on.
I think we're going to do fine, Varen said. This will be fun.
The thing I'll miss most about Envoy Sardis, Karush said, is his ability to turn off your voice.
Nieta chuckled darkly at Karush's words and shook her head.
I can't believe this is the group left behind to deal with this hellscape.
And as she finished her sentence, the sound of Adarin and Vanquin spinning up their engines washed over them. They all turned to watch as the boarding ramps, now empty, retracted and sealed. Ames was jogging back toward them. And as the two ships roared and lifted off, Elith had to remind herself that their small team wasn't really stranded. They still had the shuttle. They could escape whenever they needed to. Even so, she couldn't dispel the foreboding sense that none of them would ever see those ships again.
Chapter 12. Once they'd received word that both ships had made it safely off-world, the Arbiter didn't waste any time putting them all back to work. Elith figured they still had 7 hours of good daylight remaining, and Oyun made it clear he wanted to squeeze the last drop of utility out of every minute they had. None of them wanted to be outside camp after dark.
Two teams, he said. I'm open to suggestions as to the arrangement, but don't bother trying to convince me that we should stick together. Sardis showed us that numbers have no correlation to safety.
Elith felt an unexpected prick in her heart at the mention of the envoy's name. She hadn't realized the affinity she'd begun to develop for the man until his absence revealed an emptiness that no one else could fill. Not that she liked him exactly, but she had come to respect him. His decisive command and willingness to be out front had earned that from her. And the group was slower to organize without his arrogant certainty. Nieta was the first to step into the gap.
Wari Kurush, Captain Ames, she said. You take Varen along with you. The exile and I will travel together.
The suggestion came too quickly to have been well considered, or at least it seemed obviously flawed to Elith.
If we're looking for deep analysis of the planet, she countered, then we should split up, Nieta and I. We're both trained in the same arts.
We'll get more coverage if we're applying them to separate areas.
You have no authority here,
Nieta snapped. And it was a suggestion, Elith answered, not a command. Nieta scanned the others' faces, and Elith noticed how her eyes briefly lingered when they met Karush's.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, Ames said. Neither of you seem to need much help in the wilderness, so I guess I'm kind of useless on that front. But Kurush and I can each run security for one of you. How about I go with Elith and you go with Nieta?
Kurush shook his head.
I will escort the exile, he said.
Oh, all right, sure, Ames said with a shrug. Not that you're my second choice, Nieta. I was just trying to keep things moving. It's an honor, either way.
Nieta dipped her head to acknowledge the courtesy, but was clearly bothered that her recommendation had been so quickly dismissed.
If that is the group's decision, I'll not challenge it, she said. And Varen will come with me as well, Kurush added.
Wari Kurush, Varen said with a half bow. I'm honored.
The stoic man closed his eyes and exhaled through his wide nostrils.
Arbiter, Elith said, I guess that puts you with Nieta and Captain Ames?
No, he answered. I'll stay here to continue working out whatever it is we've already found.
I'm not sure that's safe, sir, Ames said.
Of course it isn't, Oyun said. None of this is, Captain.
But I'll do more good here than I would out there. And it'll be good to have some time to myself for a change without all these other people buzzing around interrupting my work.
You gonna grab a nap? Ames asked, smiling.
Not my intent, but certainly within the realm of possibility. Sometimes I'm better with the math in my dreams.
What are we looking for exactly? Elith asked.
The nature of the planet, Oyun said, to the best of your unique abilities.
Elith waited a moment for something more specific, but the Arbiter didn't offer anything.
That's a broad category, Arbiter, she said. Do you want to narrow it down for us?
Not really, no. I'm likely to tell you the wrong place to look. Better to trust your own judgment. Follow where it leads.
Your findings haven't produced any clues thus far? Nieta asked. Oyun hesitated, considered his words.
I will say that the absence of clues is peculiar enough to warrant investigating other avenues.
Bad data? Ames asked.
Excellent data, Oyun said. Inadequate analysis, perhaps. A strange world such as this, matching so many expected values, makes me suspicious. But I haven't had time to focus, and I need that now. I'll leave it to you to figure out how best to proceed from here.
Captain, perhaps you could take the lead on equipping everyone? Take whatever you need. We should have ample supplies now that we're so few.
Roger that, Ames said.
Oyun gave them a curt nod and returned to his research station. When he'd gone, Ames turned to address Elith and Nieta.
Tell me what you need, he said.
Nothing from you, Nieta said.
Elith added with a smile to soften the words, other than your support. Ames nodded.
You have that for sure. I'm going to gear up heavy for whatever it's worth. I need about 10 minutes. Wari Kurush, you good?
Yes, he said.
All right, let me get my kit. You two figure out where you want to start. We'll take the skimmer out and I can drop you off. Save a few steps anyway.
Ames departed, and Elith and Nieta curtly discussed their objective and their most effective approach. By the time the captain returned with the utility skimmer, they'd formulated a plan between them that, despite the tension, seemed well-balanced for both efficiency and quality of information. Ames drew up in front of the group, and when Elith looked in the bed of the craft, she was surprised at how loaded it already was.
"You weren't kidding about running heavy," she said. "Rather have it and not need it than need it while it's sitting back home," he answered. "But it's not all for me. I know I told you before that I wasn't allowed to arm you, but given our new direction, I figured it'd be best for us all to be shooters just in case."
He hopped out and produced two rifles from the bed of the skimmer.
"Are you both comfortable with these? If not, I can run you through the basics."
"We're proficient enough," Elith said, "but we prefer not to use them."
"Preferred or not, I'd feel better if you had them."
"Neither of us are helpless, Captain," Elith answered, "and our weapons of choice are somewhat greater." He stood for a moment, rifles still in hand, and Elith could tell he was trying to decide if he should insist on it, and uncertain whether he could persuade them to do anything, no matter how hard he tried. He reached his conclusion to both quickly enough. With a mild shrug, he placed the rifles back in the bed of the skimmer.
"Hey," Varen said, "if they're not going to use them..."
"No," Karush said.
"Believe it or not, Karush, I am actually competent with such weapons," Varen said. "And I would never shoot you."
"Never on purpose, perhaps," Karush replied. "Subo is sufficient."
"All right, then," Ames said, hopping back in the pilot's seat. "Let's do this."
Nieta joined him up front, while the others piled in the back. The captain drove them out to the far end of the glade, opposite the cliff face. There, Elith, Varen, Karush, and Subo dismounted.
"Watch yourselves," Ames said. "Stay on comms. Call if you get in trouble."
"We'll see you back at base," Elith answered.
Ames looked at her for a span, as though he had more to say, but then gave a restrained smile and said,
"See you all there."
He pulled away, headed toward the area Nieta had identified for the two of them to investigate. They would stay closer to base camp, while Elith led her party deeper into the wild. As the others watched them depart, Elith activated her local nav tracker and scanned the display, dropping a handful of markers on coordinates where terrain features suggested some promise of useful data. She didn't take long, allowing gut instinct to act before her conscious mind could produce reasons for her choices. Once those were placed, she looked up at her companions and gave them a quick nod.
"It really is a beautiful day," Varen said. "Keep together," Karush said.
"Follow me," said Elith. And with that, she crossed once more from the clearing into the darkened wood. The others followed behind, and they moved together quietly, without speaking, for a long while. Elith was pleasantly surprised at how each seemed to intuit her intent as to when to move, change direction, or pause to evaluate. It didn't take long for her and Varen to find their shared rhythm. Their time together on Quell had demanded close cooperation and forged a deep bond that time apart had been unable to diminish. Karush and Subo, too, might as well have been one, though she noted how carefully they remained on the flanks, bracketing her and Varen. She initially took it as a sign of their diligence in providing security, but she gradually became aware of how intently Karush was watching them. Though he tried to conceal it, she realized he was just as ready to respond to their actions as he was to any external threat. She'd assumed that the Azarim was focused on keeping Varen contained. She saw now that he was also watchful for any sign of trouble from her. And there was no doubt what his response would be
if he thought she posed any threat to the mission. They traveled for half an hour or so before they reached her first marker, at a small hillock topped with sparse trees with a large flat stone in their midst. She signaled for a full halt. "I need a few minutes here," she said, "preferably without interruption." Karush only nodded his assent. Varen looked up into the top of the trees with a vague smile.
"Fine choice," he said. "You do have a knack for these things."
He smiled at her and then walked to a nearby tree and sat on the ground with his back against it, his legs stretched out in front of him, feet crossed at his ankles. With a quick scan of the area and her expert eye, Elith quickly identified several candidates for good samples: a thick, rust-colored moss, a variety of ferns and other such plants, two different kinds of mushroom, and trees with deep root structures. Each would offer her a different perspective on the network of life on the planet's surface and beneath it, perspectives she would capture and compare to other such sites when she returned to camp. But before she got to that work, she climbed up to the flat rock to once more attempt her modified technique for touching the essence of the world. She turned her back to the others, centered herself, and cleared her mind of distraction, and allowed the words of the deep language to first imprint themselves on her mind before she allowed them to take shape in her breath. "Dawn chases shadow. Blossom greets the day," she spoke in a whisper, heavy with the power of the deep language. As before, the unique vitality of Quell's shadow began slowly to rise to meet her in near tangible sensations, beyond her physical senses, and yet reminiscent enough to trigger close impressions. On this second attempt, however, the escalation came faster, and the substance deeper, as though the planet remembered their first meeting and was eager to pick up where they'd left off. Time expanded or faded, and soon Elith found herself attuned only to the voice of the world and its wordless messages. And now, given the space, Quell's shadow revealed more of itself to her than it had before. Deep within its veins, the world had an affinity with Quell. Of that, there was no doubt. But it was an imperfect reflection of that planet, or an echo of it, as though someone had tried to recreate the same song but couldn't quite recall the precise melody. And underneath, something else that caught her by surprise, a vague but disconcerting hint of deceit or falsehood, the feeling of beholding a work of art and sensing that it was counterfeit without consciously being able to pinpoint why. There was life within the planet, but not quite the same life she'd come to know so well through her many years in service to the First House. Though it was too ethereal to grasp, something buried in its core felt artificial, synthetic. And as she waited in stillness, searching out the texture and substance of Quell's shadow, she felt a rising, disquieting sense that it was in return somehow, growing in its awareness of her. There was a calling hidden within, an invitation to stay, to gaze more deeply into the heart of the world, and that served as warning. Elith forced herself to break off the connection. In doing so, she snapped abruptly back into the reality of the wood, became once more aware of the stone beneath her feet, the ring of trees before her, the air around her. But traces of the planet's essence seemed to cling to her for a few seconds more, as though tiny tendrils had begun to wrap around her being and were only now withering away. She took a moment to gather herself and then turned back to face her companions. Subo stood closer to her than it had been when she began, facing toward the forest, a faithful guardian. But both Karush and Varen had their attention solely on her.
"That's it?" Karush asked.
Elith nodded. He grunted in response.
Were you expecting something more? She asked.
More than you standing there for 10 minutes, yes, Karush said. But it is not my place to know your ways.
For the first time, Eleth smiled at the Azarim's honesty and humility. Both were genuine. Perhaps in our time together we can each learn something of the other's ways, she said. She didn't expect any response from him, but to her surprise, Karush tipped his head down in a bare hint of a bow.
How'd it go?
Varen asked, rising to his feet and dusting off his pants. Eleth shook her head. Confirmation that something isn't right about this place? Not much clarity on what?
Just because it is different, he replied. Let's not assume that means it isn't right. At least not yet.
You've been talking to it? Eleth asked.
Not exactly, no. I'm just trying to keep an open mind. It might be right for whatever it's meant to do. We just don't know what that is yet.
Nothing good, Karush said. Can we continue now?
I need to collect a few samples here and then we can move on, Eleth said. Grief, you want to help?
It is my joy to serve, he said, walking over to her.
She gave him a tool and handful of collection vials. We don't need much, she said. Just a scraping or cutting will do.
Of what?
Whatever catches your fancy.
All of it does.
Then only the things that most greatly capture your grossly indiscriminate heart, I guess, she said.
Hmm,
he said, holding up one of the vials and looking at it intently.
I don't think you'll fit.
Eleth warmed at the unexpected comment, both in embarrassment and rising irritation. Don't be useless, she said, and then turned away from him to begin her own work. She could feel his smile behind her, but he said nothing else. While she collected samples from the candidates she'd identified before, Eleth found herself glancing repeatedly at the man. He worked contentedly, focused pleasantly on the environment, seemingly oblivious to her presence now. Occasionally, she noticed him pause to gently feel the texture of a leaf between his thumb and fingers, or run his hand over moss or bark, getting a sense of the world in his own way. Whenever she looked at him, she was torn between wanting to believe his affection for her was genuine and fearing what that might mean. And as she rolled the thought through her mind, wondering if it might instead be one of his subtle manipulations for some other unforeseen end. Soon enough, they'd collected all she wanted from the area, and they moved on to her next point. Over the course of a few hours, they repeated the collection process at each location she'd identified. Karush and Ames checked in over comms with each other with each change, keeping each other apprised of their current coordinates and status. At first, Eleth connected with Nieda with far less frequency. But as the afternoon progressed, they grew into regular contact, discussing their findings and adjusting their plans to ensure their joint survey was as thorough and robust as possible. And, too, with the distance and cooperation between them, Eleth noticed a gradual change in Nieda's tone and attitude toward her, where before she'd been closed off and severe at times, the walls that she'd erected seemed to be breaking down. Working alongside each other with common purpose was drawing them back together, or perhaps making it easier for them to ignore the rift that had opened between them. It wasn't until Karush insisted that they return to base camp that she realized how late it had become. But they still had maybe 2 hours before sunset, and at least a half hour beyond of workable light, and their camp was no more than an hour of direct travel from their current location. Though she guessed she had enough material to work with, Eleth wasn't quite ready to give up when there was still so much they could gather and discover. "Let's push on a little farther and see how it goes," she said. "We've got time."
"We have time if there's no trouble," Karush answered. "And it's foolish to expect no trouble."
"Just one more location, then?"
"No."
Eleth turned to square off with the Azarim. There was no chain of command between them. And as far as she was concerned, Karush was escorting her while she conducted the work Oyun had directed her to do.
If you want to head on back, I have no problem with that, she said. But I'm going to go farther in while I still have light. I don't want to have to come all the way back out here just to collect something I could have picked up on this trip.
The shift in his stance was subtle, but unmistakable to Eleth's keen eye. He wasn't planning to allow any argument and seemed prepared to use the threat of violence to make his point.
I have advised our return, he said, the perfect calm in his voice at odds with the coiled energy of his body. We will do so whether you are willing or not.
Though there was no obvious command or signal, Subo too shifted, turning to face her and seeming to expand to an even more menacing stature.
Wari Karush, Varen said. We're all on the same team here. I'm not certain of that, Karush responded.
I am, Eleth said. The Azurim locked eyes with her. She met his gaze. Long ago, her instructors in the first house had given her a simple heuristic for identifying the greatest potential threat. Whenever a situation grew tense, she always looked first for the calmest person in the room. And in that moment, Karush seemed completely and utterly at ease. Though his hands remained at his side, Eleth wondered just how quickly he could deploy the void edge. Faster than she could speak?
Whoa, hey, slow down, guys, Varen said. You're upsetting Subo.
Neither of them made any acknowledgement of him, nor even took their eyes off the other.
Subo hates it when Mom and Dad fight.
Still, the standoff continued. Eleth had no intention of backing down, no matter what the Azurim and his machine did to intimidate her. But Varen stepped between them, facing her, and intercepted her gaze. Eleth, he said, with quiet kindness.
Not now, Grief.
Eleth, he repeated, I agree with Wari Karush. We've done enough for today.
The words hit her as half insult and half betrayal. She didn't try to hide the emotion.
Oh, have we? What exactly would make you think you are the judge of that? She asked.
He held up a hand, intending to calm her. The gesture didn't have that effect.
You've done a lot of work today, he said. I'm sure Nieta has as well. Don't argue this with me, Grief. You're not equipped for it.
He smiled, deflecting the words.
And, he continued as though she hadn't interrupted, I may have some additional insight to offer.
Though she'd initially taken his intervention as a mere attempt at peacekeeping, Eleth now saw that he was subtly communicating to her that he had indeed found something, something he didn't care to discuss in front of others.
Will you come with us?
He asked, turning his upheld hand over, palm up, and extending it to her. An invitation to join him. Eleth wrestled with the decision. Karush had turned a simple matter into a war of wills, and that was not an arena in which it was wise to test a daughter of the first house. Returning now would mean submitting to the Azurim, and she didn't like the implications such an action might have in the future. But she knew, too, that selfish pride was rarely a good counselor, and with the addition of Varen's comments, she was no longer certain that raw ego wasn't a factor.
Come with me, Varen said softly.
Eleth held a moment longer, but finally nodded her assent. She couldn't bring herself to give the Azurim the pleasure of a verbal response. He didn't seem to need it, or to care. Subo resumed its usual size, still hulking, but certainly less threatening.
Captain Ames, Karush said into his comms as calm as ever, we're returning to base camp now. We should arrive in about an hour if we don't run into any trouble.
Yeah, roger that, Ames replied. We're wrapping up here too. I'll drop Nieta off and meet you with the skimmer.
Thank you, Karush said.
And then, without waiting for further discussion, he turned and started leading them back to camp. Subo, however, remained next to Eleth and didn't move until she and Varen began to follow the Azirim. Once they did, the machine closed in behind them, acting both as rear guard and warden. They reached the edge of the forest within the hour, as Eleth had anticipated, encountering nothing unusual along the way. She felt vindicated to some degree, and mildly frustrated that she hadn't taken the time to investigate one more site as she'd intended. But as they reached the final stretch, she also wondered if Arbiter Oyun's hypothesis was beginning to prove correct. It was too early to know for sure, but each hour that went by without hearing the strange knocking sound made it seem increasingly likely. When they emerged from the tree line, Ames was waiting for them in the skimmer, and when they'd loaded up, he took them swiftly to camp. Eleth joined him up front. "Good day," he asked as they crossed the glade. "We'll see," she answered. He glanced at her, read her expression, and then said, "Well, looks like we're all going to make it home, so I'm going to count it a good day regardless of whether or not it was productive." He pulled up in front of Oyun's station. Nieto was waiting out front, and Oyun, presumably, was still inside. The group dismounted from the skimmer, and Ames and Karush started toward the station. But Varen remained next to the skimmer.
"You guys go ahead," he called. "I'd like to talk to the housemates for a moment."
Ames looked back at him, then waved and said,
"Sure, all right."
But Karush stopped and turned around.
"Come on, Karush," Varen said. "I'm not going to cause any trouble. Can't you trust me just a little bit? I did talk Eleth into listening to you, after all."
"You may talk about whatever you wish," Karush answered, "but I will hear it."
"You may hear it, but I don't think you'll understand it," Varen countered.
Karush thought for a moment, then wordlessly turned and walked the rest of the way to the station. He didn't enter, though. He stood watch there, giving them some space, but not so much that he couldn't intervene if he felt it necessary. Subo, of course, remained close by.
"Eh?" Varen said.
"Close enough."
Nieto walked over to join the two of them. "You didn't talk me into listening to Karush, by the way," Eleth said. "I just got the sense that you'd found something useful."
"Don't be offended," he said. "I was only trying to make him feel better."
"What did you want to say?" Nieta asked, with some impatience.
"I know you two have a lot to analyze before you'll make any judgment, but I just wanted to give you my perspective," Varen said.
He paused for some response. Eleth just raised her eyebrows, waiting for him to continue. He nodded.
"There's something going on deep in the heart of this planet."
"Wow," Nieta said. "Great insight, thanks."
"I don't mean all the weirdness," he said. "I mean something in its heart, in the, whatever you want to call it, essence or spirit of the world. It's struggling."
"Yes," Eleth said. "With us?"
"No,"
Varen replied.
"With itself."
Nieta sighed. "I'm not sure how you would know that, Varen, and I don't think it's going to be relevant to what we need to do here."
"I don't know," he said, shaking his head. "I just can't bring myself to believe this place is entirely evil. It has some purpose, and I think we have a part to play in discovering it, or maybe in fulfilling it."
Nieta scoffed and said,
"That's not a surprise. Somehow you always think you're the center of the universe." "That's because I am," Varen said seriously. "It's infinite in every direction, after all. So wherever I go, I'm the center of it."
He paused a moment, then he smiled and added,
"But then, so are you."
"All right, Grief," Eleth said. "Thanks for sharing. Can we get to our work now?"
He looked at her, eyes lingering on hers for a span, searching for something he hoped to find but didn't yet see.
"Sure."
"Thank you," Eleth said, and she moved toward Oyun's station. The others followed, and when they entered, They found Oyun sitting in front of four active displays, staring intently at them. He made no acknowledgement of them, and Ames, standing off to one side, waved silently at them, not to interrupt. Elith crossed to him quietly, leaned in close and whispered, "Can we start setting up our gear, or should we come back later?"
"I think you can go ahead," he said, "as long as you keep it quiet, and don't talk to him."
"How long do you think he's been like this?"
"No idea. Maybe since we've been gone."
"Any guess how long he'll continue?"
"Until he's done. Could be hours."
Elith nodded, returned to Nieta to explain the situation, and then together they found a quiet corner in the small center to set up their equipment and begin their analysis. They worked in silence for a couple of hours, each analyzing the samples they'd collected and feeding the data into a common pool where they could begin building a model of the planetary network. But as they added data, Elith was disappointed to find that the picture didn't seem to be getting any clearer. She knew it would take more time and a wider range of sampling to get a complete and accurate model. But despite having what should have been more than enough data to locate a thread line somewhere in the area, she couldn't find one. In fact, she couldn't identify any within the planet. Every world had its unique pattern of thread lines, fingerprints of its formation, the history of how it came to be, and how it continued to exist, written within the veins of its internal ecosystem. Understanding those thread lines was the key to Elith's ability to discern a planet's nature, and more importantly, its vulnerabilities. But no matter how she manipulated the findings she and Nieta had collected, she couldn't extrapolate even a hint of a single thread line. Nieta was seeing the same thing, and after working in silence for so long, Elith signaled that they should go outside to discuss the matter. Nieta nodded, and the two of them rose from their workstations to go outside. Oyun was still at work, apparently oblivious to his surroundings, and Ames had wandered off at some point, likely bored by all the academic work that no one was including him in. As the two women began to move toward the door, however, Elith began to feel a strange sensation. It started beneath her, like a subtle vibration of the ground. She stopped and placed her hand on a nearby table to steady herself, thinking at first that she was feeling lightheaded or experiencing some other symptom of fatigue. But when she looked at Nieta, she seemed to be feeling it too. Oyun, on the other hand, continued his work uninterrupted. As the two of them stood there, the sensation grew in intensity, a slowly rising buildup, like static electricity gathering in the air before a storm. It took a moment before Elith realized that she wasn't feeling physical movement, but rather something deeper within, a familiar resonance folding back upon itself, its amplitude surging in intensity with each cycle of the feedback loop. Familiar, but not the same. The strange qualities of the phenomenon gave it a different energy and texture, but couldn't obscure its foundations. It was the same feeling she had when she uttered the words of the deep language. That of cosmic power, flowing through her, or rather, rushing around her from all sides. When recognition came, Elith flew to the door, heedless of the noise she created, and burst into the open. Her sudden appearance caused a sharp reaction from Kourouche and Captain Ames, who were standing together outside.
"What's going on?" Ames said, concerned.
Elith didn't answer as she jogged to a patch of open ground near the center of the camp. The air vibrated with potential energy. Something was about to happen.
"Elith, you okay?"
Ames called, walking toward her. He was oblivious to the power surge, confirming Elith's fears. Those who had never experienced the deep language had no sensitivity to its impact. Varen came out of a nearby shelter, alarmed, and looked up first at the night sky above them, and then at Elith. His expression was enough. He felt it too, and it frightened him. He jogged toward her.
"What do you think it is?" he said.
Elith shook her head as he came up next to her. Nieta, too, joined them, all three searching the area for any sign of what might be coming.
"Okay, folks," Ames said. "You're kind of starting to freak me out here. What's the deal?"
Before anyone could respond, the stacked wave of energy vanished in an instant. Not a slow dissipation, rather a sudden release. But to Elith's surprise, nothing had changed, at least not that she could see.
"What was that?"
Nieta asked.
"I don't know," Elith answered.
"It came from within the planet," Varen said.
"Deep, deep within the planet."
Elith nodded. That was the impression she'd had as well, though she couldn't express why.
"Seriously?" Ames said. "What's going on?"
"Some kind of energy pulse," Elith said.
"I didn't feel anything."
"You wouldn't," she said, "unless you've been trained like we have." Oyun appeared at the front of his station, looking as though he were still struggling to re-enter the reality of the physical world after his long stint in an abstract one.
"Is everything okay?"
he called to the others.
"As far as we can tell," Ames replied. "But our friends here are spooked."
Karush was the first to notice.
"The sky's different," he said.
"What do you mean?"
Ames said, looking at the Azirim and then up at the sky. Elith searched the heavens above them and almost immediately identified what had changed. The realization nearly buckled her knees. She managed to keep her feet, but still she trembled as she told the others what she saw.
"Quell is gone,"